Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, December 8th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. We encourage people to go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. When you do that, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon, which will give you access, if you click on it, give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope you choose to do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, testimonials, or requests for assistance in applying the tools. And that's why we're here in our current format, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. And today is the 342nd day of the year. And I'm going to back up just a minute, a couple days, and remind us that there's a section with a title with a question, what is a miracle? And the short version of the answer to that is that a miracle is a movement from hostility to or fear to love, the choice of changing the filter in your mind, shifting your perception from fear to love. A miracle is a correction. It doesn't change anything. It allows, it's you becoming aware of the truth of what already is. The miracle would be the correction of a false perception. And then yesterday, we read a lesson that's very convoluted, but essentially what it means is you were given total perfect safety as an entity when you were born. Your essence cannot be harmed in any way. And anytime you generate thoughts of attack, that you're being attacked or you're attacking someone else, you're creating the false belief that you are vulnerable, that there's something you could lose that is of value, absolute sense, that there is something you could gain that is of value in an absolute sense. So today, lesson 342 says, I let forgiveness rest upon all things, for thus forgiveness will be given to me. And when you read that at first glance, it's tempting to think in terms of pardoning. I'll forgive and I'll pardon everybody else and then people will pardon me for my sins. But I call us to our last lesson, which said, you are perfect, whole and complete, and totally sinless, and that is your true nature. So there is nothing for me to be forgiven for. It's just the forgiveness in this work means the removal of any false perception. So I will see everything clearly, and then I will be seen clearly and truthfully as the blessing of the creative energy expressing in form that I am. Second part of the commentary begins with, brother, forgive me now. And I would bring our definition of forgiveness into this, and that can more accurately be stated, sister and brother, see us, let us see each other as we truly are. The blessing of the creative energy expressing in form. Every time we have a perception that generates hostility or fear or comes from a mind that is loaded with hostility or fear, it's a lie. It's a hallucination. It's an illusion. And all of these lessons are about restoring our accurate perception. End all the dreams of separation. See the truth that it's a miracle that we're here, that we have the gift of life, and that the source of all life has given us everything that we have, the ability to be aware, all energy, all ability, perceive, etc. And understand that the best use of any negative emotional state is as an alarm system to help me wake up to the fact that there's something about my thought process in this moment that is in error. And when I correct that thought process, when I choose a different filter for my thoughts, then my perception is restored. Perception, true perception, that spiritual faculty. We're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment lessons from Pam Grout, and lesson 342 is titled, Drink It Up, My Friends. And she quotes St. Augustine. I'll never know why people do that, but she quotes St. Augustine as saying, love God and do what you want. Pam writes, I used to believe if I surrendered to the dude, that's her word for God or the creator, if I surrendered to the dude, I'd be required to work with starving babies in countries with Ebola and typhoid and other unmentionable diseases. She says, I attribute this to the stream of foreign missionaries that came through my home when I was a kid. Lesson 342 tells me, the only thing the dude asks of me is to expand his goodness and to love as much as I possibly can. By simply showing up and using the gifts I was given, I receive even more gifts. To name just a few, point number one, I was invited to Verona, Italy, where I danced to a 12-piece orchestra at a 16th century estate that once hosted Winston Churchill and Lady Di. And I stood on Juliet's famous balcony. For good measure, I even shouted out, Wherefore art thou, Romeo? Point number two, I was slathered by volcanic ash and sand at the Puning Hot Springs and Spa near Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines. Point number three, I was hosted by a Renaissance castle. I was hosted in a Renaissance castle complete with a moat just outside the medieval town of Kutná Hora, a UNESCO World Heritage Site in the Czech Republic. Point number four, I walked 40 miles of Cotswold Trail in England. It's where the PBS show Father Brown is filmed. Point number five, and I got to help break the Guinness World Record for most zombies. She puts in parentheses here, I used beet juice for blood, closing parentheses, and she was dancing to Michael Jackson's Thriller. She writes, I love that about the dude. He only wants my good. He only wants to bless me. He only wants me to use my gifts, the ones that creation has given her, to expand creation's glory. And that's what each and every one of us are called to do. And if we don't know how to do that, it's recommended in this work that we take a breath before we do anything and just ask our internal guidance, how can I be a blessing to myself and others in this next moment? What is mine to do here? I wonder how this message, this moment, this series of events is going to turn out better than I could have imagined. And then, if I'm willing to take that move, then I simply rest and trust in the knowledge that whatever happens after that is going to be just fine. It's going to be better than anything I could have predicted or planned with my conscious logical mind. And I open myself up to insight, guidance, synchronicity, miracles, whatever you want to call it, when I step out of the process of mind that says, I'm going to figure this out. Michael Rice calls figuring it out the number one solution for the non-being mind, the part of my mind that thinks that it's smarter than everyone and everything else. It's constantly trying to figure things out. And that's a trap. It's a big trap, especially when it comes to the mental and emotional and psychological discomforts that we experience, because they are created through a misapplication of our conscious logical mind. And so the application of the conscious logical mind cannot be the solution that was created by that same process. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We had our support group last night, and somebody put out the request to have a less intense meeting than previous weeks. And then somebody else suggested, why don't we listen to some Way of Mastery? That's a loving, kinder, gentler, loving version of the Course in Miracles, so why don't we listen to part of that? So we did. We listened to the reading of Lesson 20. And if the comments from the participants are any indication, it did strike people as a more loving, a more gentle, kind, nurturing way to spend the, I guess it was close to an hour, hour and a half, and that the comments and processing that went on after that seemed to me anyway to be useful. The title of that lesson is Vigilance for the Kingdom. And as so often happens in a book like that, which is pretty much a fractal to my way of thinking about it, each chapter contains parts of every other chapter, And it's talking about how we create our own experience of life, and whatever we decree, we experience, because our experience is an internal creation of our own perception that's driven by the interpretation we give these life events. And as it, of course, in Way of Mastery talks about it so many different ways, it says, all events are neutral. As a matter of fact, there's an entire lesson in that book titled All Events Are Neutral. And then it's very clear that while all events are neutral, my thoughts about them are not neutral. My thoughts about the life events that unfold, that pass in front of me, that I'm a part of, they are what create my happiness, my sadness, my fear, my anger, my contentment, etc. I mentioned that I've been reading yet another book by Pema Chodron, and in the in that book, one of the themes that is so strongly resonant for me is that she's talking over and over again about being gentle with yourself. And when you find yourself trying to do one of these lessons and you find yourself off the mark, just see it. Just say, oh, I just spent some time gossiping, or I just spent some time blaming, or I just spent some time beating myself up. Okay. Take a breath and then start again. And she's talking about the Lojong teachings and how they're organized around 7 points. Those 7 points contain 59 slogans that remind us about how to awaken our hearts. And I think, I don't know how many she puts in the book, but there are 19 of them here in this article I pulled up. And it asks us to first train in the preliminaries. In the basic preliminaries, number one, maintain an awareness of the preciousness of human life, which is right in line with the reality management worksheet, which right at the very beginning it says, look, in the beginning, the premise that we begin this worksheet and every worksheet is, the premise is my essential nature, my human life, my very being is love. And the goal of this worksheet is to help me remove any form of hostility or fear so that it's easy for me to have direct conscious awareness of my true nature. And in this work, the Buddhist work, my true nature contains the My true nature contains the preciousness of human life. The second point in the preliminaries is be aware of the reality that life ends. Death comes for everyone. And that's one of those preliminaries that helps people move into the process of letting go, which is a part of a skill set. The third point in the preliminaries is recall that whatever you do, whether it's virtuous or not, has a result. There are consequences to everything we do, and it's okay. The fourth point is contemplate that as long as you are too focused on your self-importance or too caught up in thinking about how you are good or how you are bad, as long as you're focused too much on that, you will continue to suffer. if you obsess about getting what you want and avoiding what you don't want, you will continue to suffer. So then there are these slogans. One of them is, regard all dharmas, all realities, all experiences you have as dreams. Whatever you experience in your life, pleasure, pain, cold, heat, or anything else, is like something happening in a dream. If you can move to that state and recognize that your essence is not impacted by this, your essence is simply having an experience of that, it helps minimize your suffering. The next one says, sending and taking should be practiced alternately. These two should ride like the breath. It's a practice of Tonglen, where we pull in the pain and suffering of ourselves and anybody else, and we send out the healing and joy to everyone else. The next slogan is, drive all blames into one. This is advice on how to work with your fellow beings. Everyone is looking for someone to blame, and therefore aggression and neurosis will keep expanding. Instead, pause and look at what's happening with you. When you hold on so tightly to your view of what this other person did or didn't do, then you get hooked. And your own self-righteousness causes you to get all worked up and to suffer. So work on cooling that reactivity rather than escalating it. This approach reduces suffering, yours and everyone else's. It's just the flow of life. There is no one to blame. Instead of talking about blame, let's ask, how can I assist this suffering to unravel itself? The next slogan says, be grateful to everyone. This is the art of learning to understand that everyone and everything you come into contact with has the potential to show you where you are stuck. When they say or do something and you automatically get hooked, whether it's a familiar pattern of getting hooked or an unfamiliar pattern, and you react by shutting down or speeding up and getting all worked up, when you react in the habitual way with any of the negative emotions, anger, greed, bitterness, hurt, resentment, this gives you a chance to see the boulders in your backpack that you walked into that moment with. And if you're willing to unload the backpack and see what's in there, then you can work with them honestly and compassionately. The next slogan is, all dharma agrees at one point. All of the Buddhist teachings, all of the dharma teachings are about lessening one's self-absorption and lessening the clinging to the ego identification. And the more you lessen those things, the happier you are. The next slogan says, of the two witnesses, hold the principal one. The two witnesses of what you do are others and yourself. Of these two, you are the only one who really knows exactly what is going on with you. So work with seeing yourself with compassion and absolute honesty. The next slogan says, always maintain a joyful mind. Constantly apply cheerfulness, if for no other reason than because you are on the spiritual path. Have a sense of gratitude to everything and everyone, even difficult emotions, because they have the potential to wake you up. Words from Anthony DeMello echoing in my head. Wake up. Be aware. Awareness, awareness, awareness. Wake up. You're asleep. If you're angry, you're asleep. If you're sad, you're asleep. If you're holding offense, bitterness, resentment, hurt, guilt, shame, blame, you're asleep. Wake up. Awareness, awareness, awareness. The next slogan says, abandon any hope of fruition. Be awake and aware and allowing and supportive and accepting of what's going on in the moment. Don't think this isn't good enough. I need this or that to change for me to be happy. The key instruction here is to stay in the present moment. Guy Finley calls it the presence moment. Don't get caught up in hopes that you'll achieve something in the future or being proud of your situation or your strengths or your values or how things might get better someday. Be in the present moment. Makes me think of the, I had a person in my office not too long ago I said, so what are, when you look at your current situation, what is it that you don't like? And she, how do you see it? And she said, well, I don't have this, and I don't have this, and I don't have this. She listed like five or six things that she doesn't have because her parents are dead. So she doesn't have any parents living. She's not married, so she doesn't have a partner. And I just sat there with this smile on my face because she gave me the perfect way to address her situation. She didn't talk about a single thing that she does have, and she's got quite a bit. She's got a good job. She's got a roof over her head. She's got pets. She's got her, you know, relative physical health and all kinds of physical possessions. She's got some very good friends, and she didn't list any of the things that she has. She just listed a bunch of things she doesn't have. And that was setting her up to think she needs to get some of those things in order to be happy, in order to heal, in order to move forward, in order to move out of depression, etc. You will never be complete. One of the ways that the Way of Mastery talks about this is to say, how could you ever hope to finish knowing yourself when you are a spark of the ever-expanding consciousness of life? When you are a spark of the divine mind, when you are a spark of creation, how could you ever hope to be done knowing about yourself? Because you're always growing and changing. So this is one that really hits people, this slogan, abandon any hope of ever being done. I remember years ago in the support group, probably 16, 17 years ago, I made a statement like this in a support group sitting around one of those conference room tables. And I said, I'm never going to be done with my work. And a person slammed his fist on the table and raised his voice and said, that's not true. We can be done in a heartbeat, in a flash of an eye, and we can reach enlightenment. And I just smiled and said, okay. He goes, what do you mean, okay? You said you're never going to be done. I said, I'm never going to be done. You can be done in the next moment if you want. Good luck. I hope you enjoy what you achieve when you think you're done in the next moment, but I don't plan to be done. I had been reading The Way of Mastery and some other teachings that resonated very deeply for me that said, it's kind of hopeful that there's always going to be more to learn and grow into about myself, about the nature of life, about creation itself. So this slogan from the Buddhist teachings that says, abandon any hope of fruition, aligns me with this other observation that I don't know everything and I probably won't ever know everything. And so whatever it is I think I know is either only partially true or perhaps even completely false. So there are others, but let us take a pause here and ask if anybody has any comments, questions, answers, testimonials, requests for support in using the worksheets. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We've got 6 or 7 people on the call. Depends upon who I look at or when I look at the switchboard. And we've got nobody in the chat room. And we've got about 28 minutes to have a conversation. What's on your mind today? What's resonating with your listening to our Course in Miracles lesson for today? One of the things that I got from the Pema Chodron book that was, again, kind of in this context of being gentle with yourself, she's talking about karma and how so many people have this contentious, rough, what goes around comes around, you're going to pay for what you did wrong, kind of, you know, your sins are going to come back and haunt you kind of thought about karma. And here's Pema Chodron writing, and she says, look, let's give up all of that punishment stuff. Let's give up all of that you're going to pay kind of a thought about karma. Let's look at karma as this. The idea of karma is that you continually get to teach the things that you need to teach in order to open your heart. What if the point of life, this extension of creative energy, this unfolding of all the people you're going to meet in your life and how the day goes when it goes against the plan that you had for it, what if all of that is there to serve for the unfolding of opportunities for you to open your heart? And what if being completely open in your heart, being completely in allowance and surrender and willingness to be taught by life in the moment, what if that's the only way for you to achieve the actual contentment or to fulfill your purpose, whatever that might be in the mind of creation, in the flow of life? What if the only way to accomplish that is to be open in your heart space? Guy Finley talks about how lessons are going to keep coming, almost like a broken record. They're going to keep coming back into our life in various forms until we realize that we haven't learned the lesson. And once we realize that we haven't learned the lesson, there's no need for the lesson to keep coming back. Now, notice how it's stated in this negative. It's one of the few things I like to state in the negative because it's the intention of Guy Finley's teaching. So I'm taking the conscious logical mind out of it. So I'm not saying with my conscious logical mind, oh, the lesson I'm supposed to get here is this, this, and this. And I'm using my conscious logical mind to define a particular lesson. How many times have I done that, and then the same kind of problem keeps happening? And I say, oh, so the lesson I'm supposed to get from this is, and I decide on a lesson. But if the problem or the pattern of problem keeps happening, it might be useful for me to wake up and realize, you know what, if this thing keeps happening and it's something I don't like, there must be a lesson in here that I haven't learned. And I open my heart, I open my energy, I open my mind to something that's completely different than anything I've thought about before. And when I do that, there's a potential for learning. Whenever I say, oh, I know what this lesson is for, I'm not learning anything. I'm taking something from my past and trying to stuff the present moment into that format, into that template. So Pema Chodron says, the idea of karma is that you continually get to teach things that you need in order to open your heart. I heard briefly from Corinne Zupko, who is the author of From Anxiety to Love. And we've interviewed her in the past, and I sent her the link to the onbeing.org podcast of The Future of Well-Being with Krista interviewing Surgeon General Vivek Murthy and one of his friends. And she sounds like she's doing well, and that's a book you might want to check out if you've got a lot of anxiety, if you like The Course in Miracles. Corinne is a woman who, as a child, had all kinds of problems with anxiety and actually got labels from psychological and psychiatric professionals. And then finally, when she was in college, she had this crisis, called her mom at 3 a.m, and her mom said, now will you be willing to take a look at The Course in Miracles? And Corinne was just at such a desperate space that she said, okay, I'll even be willing to look at A Course in Miracles. And once she got into it, it transformed her life, and she began reading it, studying it, working with it, and she created a book, From Anxiety to Love, that has actual tools in it, suggested meditations and affirmations, and there's a whole systemic way that she uses the teachings. And we reviewed the book, we interviewed her, it's in the archives, and I think that book is on the list of books that we've discussed, which you can find on mindshiftersacademy.org website. There's a separate page for books that we've discussed in detail and or interviewed the authors of here on Mindshifters Radio. And I suppose I need to update that to include books like Reconciliation from Thich Nhat Hanh. We've talked about that, how it's about inner child work, from one of the great Vietnamese Buddhist teachers. I probably don't have Richard Moss's books up there, Inside Out Healing and the Mandala of Being. I discovered the power of awareness. So I will make some time in the near future. I probably don't have Gabor Mate's book, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, up there, but that's another one we've talked about quite a bit as having some very useful awareness and citing research about how trauma in our childhood literally changes the structure of our brain as it's developing. So 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, let us know what's on your mind. We've got about 18 minutes left. We've discussed books like Healing Depression Without Medication by Dr. Jody Skillicorn. And Here's the book Anxiety to Love by Corinne Zupko, a radical new approach for letting go of fear and finding lasting peace. The hits go on. So I will make the commitment in the next week or so to update that list of books on MindShiftersAcademy.org website and add some of the books we've discussed that haven't been listed there. And I will invite you to give us a call or send us an email, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. And let us know what are your thoughts about who we should interview or books we should read or podcasts we should be listening to. Another book that we've talked about is The Tao Made Easy. And the Tao kind of needs someone like Alan Cohen, who's the author of The Tao Made Easy, for my mind, to help make it more accessible. The Tao, Lesson 60, says, governing a great state is like cooking small fish. And I don't know what that means. Let the kingdom be governed according to the Tao, and the manes of the departed will not manifest their spiritual energy. It's not it's not that those manes have not that spiritual energy, but it will not be employed to hurt men. It is not that it could not hurt men, but neither does the ruling sage hurt them. When these two do not injuriously affect each other, their good fortunes converge in the virtue of the Tao. I kept trying to read this book, The Tao, and I would be as muddled weeks after reading that as I would the first time. And so that's why I picked up a book like The Tao Made Easy by Alan Cohen. And I was very pleased with it. It's now on my minimum of once a year read and reread. The last few years, I've done it a couple times a year. And I was blessed with somebody convincing me to try Audible. And those books by Alan Cohen, the ones that I have, Alan Cohen's actually reading them. So you get the author's, not always a good thing, but you get the author's personality and reading style in it. So, what's on your mind? How can we support you? What's a good book we should be reading or an author we should be interviewing? What's an area of interest in your life that we don't talk about as much here because there's, you know, almost 11 years now of conversations around these tools, around our lives as people, around our emotions and relationships, around our physical, mental, and emotional health and well-being. All of that is fair game. How can we support you today? Give us a call and let us know what would be of interest for you to spend the next 14 or 15 minutes discussing. (563) 999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and let us know what's on your mind. I was looking up an idiom like, the worm has turned. And that's a phrase that my father would use on a regular basis. He was a fan of words. I think I've mentioned he had a very good friend, and they used to greet each other each work day with the word of the day. And they would invite the other to give them a definition of the word and use it in a sentence. And they would keep trying to stump each other back and forth. And the reason I mention this today is because this morning the worm has turned, kept popping into my mind. So I looked it up. The idiom, the worm has turned, dates back to the 1500s. An idiom is a word, group of words, or phrase that has a figurative meaning that is not easily deduced from its literal definition. It often uses descriptive imagery, and it's figurative, not literal. Common idioms are words and phrases used in the English language in order to convey a concise idea and are often spoken or are considered informal or conversational. Some of the English idioms can illustrate emotion more quickly than a phrase that has a literal meaning. Even when the origin of the idiomatic expression is lost, people don't even know how or why do they say the worm has turned. Where did that come from? An idiom is a metaphorical figure of speech, and it is understood that it is not a use of literal language. So many English as a second language students do not understand idiomatic expressions such as once in a blue moon, or don't spill the beans, or don't let the cat out of the bag, or chin up, or, you know, that person wasn't on the ball, tree, or I hope he doesn't kick the bucket, or boy, that really hit the nail on the head, or that person's under the weather, or oh, that job was a piece of cake. So why do I mention this? Well, because the work that Michael Rice produces here in our Kabor's manuscript and the reality management worksheet and so many of these tools is based on knowledge of what was going on in the ancient Aramaic language that is not accessible unless one studies and understands the idioms of that time. So, Susan, what's on your mind today?
That's a perfect segue into a fun little thing that happened yesterday. Has Yorate sent you a 6-minute long video of Bob Newhart? It's a Bob Newhart pretending he's a therapist. And if she hasn't sent it to you, I can send it to you.
Well, she didn't send it, but I've known of this for a long time. It's,
oh, okay.
It's the cut it out or the stop it thing, right? And just
stop it.
Just cut it out. It's his 5-minute therapy, right? You pay for 5 minutes, and at the end of the 5 minutes, if you want to keep going and you want to hear him say cut it out even more, you got to pay him more money.
I know. It's fantastic. And yesterday I was just in this funk, and I was on the radio show, and she texted me and said a few kind things, and then sent me film, and I watched it, and it was like the instant cure. And I thought, Dr. Kim, if you really did this, I mean, if people really did this, I mean, you'd be out of a job. It was so perfect. So the fact that you already know it, then I don't need to tell it. I was going to sort of recount what it is on there, but just to say that sometimes the community listeners piping up in a text, even while somebody might be right on the radio show at the time. Sometimes it's just so perfect. And this was just so perfect. It cheered me up so much that I've been cheered up ever since. And I couldn't sleep much last night, not because of that, but just even in spite of not being able to sleep, I've just been laughing all day because it's whenever I start going into my thing, my favorite miserable and stuff, I just remember him yelling, "Stop it." And it's just very helpful for short-term therapy. I recommend it.
Okay.
And he shuts people down when they're going into their story too. And there's something to be said about that.
Yeah. Well, and there, you know, if you've, can you hear me?
Yep.
If you've been to a Michael Rice intensive center or one of his intensives long enough, and maybe he doesn't do it as much now, but he especially in the early years of this internet show, he would talk about how he doesn't want to hear your story. He doesn't want to understand how you've created all this pain. He doesn't want to go into your pain with you, because if he goes into your pain with you, he can't help you. He wants to stand outside of it in the knowledge that it's self-induced nonsense and help you see the perspective from which you begin to understand it's not being done to you and you have a sense of control or agency, personal power that you could use to change the process that's creating what you don't want to feel. So, you know, he would talk more in the past about, I don't want to go into your pain with you. Because once I go into your pain with you, once I get angry with you at so-and-so and such, then I can't help you dismantle your pain.
That's really interesting. I understand that. What I always thought he meant by don't go into your story again is because maybe the story was good for background, but to keep going into it means you keep sitting in the victim box. You keep creating the scene. And really, you've got to just stop it. You know, I mean, you've got to leave that.
That's another aspect of why it's good to let go of the story.
Right. Or to let it float up and then just let it float right through. And, you know, say, oh, there you are again. Okay, here's the back door. Farewell. Nice that you visited. Thank you very much. Yeah. Not give it any energy. Not go there over and over again. That's one reason I've had a hard time working with Mira. I've found her. She's excellent. This isn't bad-mouthing her at all. It's just that she requires a kind of a relaxed meditative inquiry. It's sort of like the patter thing taken so far that, and she'll lead you there. That's her specialty. She calls it the core connection, but it's really the patter section of the worksheet, drawn out. And we, Tim Bingham and I have been working with her we've agreed to do 3 months of sessions. That's how she sets it up. And when my day comes, I think, oh my God, I gotta go in there again. I gotta do this. And often I'll go into my session not needing right then, not feeling any upset, feeling good, not wanting to go there. But somehow she gets you there anyway. And I have this question in my mind, is this a good thing? Because I seem to be fine, so why stir the pot again? And I'm reminded of my mother-in-law. Right, or my mother-in-law who used to say, well, I get along all right in life, so why? I've never been in therapy, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to bother about that. The machine is working, so I'm going to just lead my life. And, of course, like everybody else, she got mad and she got sad and she had clashes in her relationships. But for her, she felt as if her life was working well enough, and she didn't want to do that. And I had to say, there's something to be said for that, you know. So anyway, I don't know what I'm doing telling you all this stuff, but it was just so fun to have the community draw together in the form of one Yurate, who's in quarantine, and have send me this absolutely perfect thing. Yeah, what?
But before you move off of it,
yeah.
One time when I was in the intensive center at Heartland, it was a teacher training, and we were given a section of the book that we had to teach. And as part of my teaching in prayer and meditation, or whatever you want to call it, you know, trying to prep for this for days, what came to me is the chocolate milk analogy.
Okay.
And the chocolate milk analogy is that when I was a kid, we used to talk about how you could get ice-cold milk. Of course, it wasn't ice-cold, but it was quite cold from the refrigerator. And there was nothing better than this great, fresh, whole, cold milk. You can't get that these days, right? It's all pasteurized and homogenized, and it's not whole at all. But we used to get it, cream on the top, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So we also had this other very unhealthy thing, which was this chocolate syrup. And, you know, it used to come in a can. And it would be kept in the refrigerator, and the milk would be kept in the refrigerator, and you could pour that syrup into a full glass of milk, and it would all go right to the bottom and settle. And you'd have a glass of white milk with some chocolate syrup sitting at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came to me to talk in this segment where I was supposed to be teaching about this, that if I really love my pure white milk and I go to drink it and I'm drinking it, it's great, and I don't even notice that there's this, you know, inch and a half or 2 inches of chocolate syrup at the bottom, because all I'm tasting is the beautiful white milk. And then a spoon gets dropped in and starts spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
And now the pure white milk that I like is all this brown color. And I taste it, and it's horrible. I don't like chocolate, right? And I get angry at the spoon because the spoon gave me chocolate milk.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm absolutely convinced that that's what happened, because I saw that... there was white milk, and then the spoon came, and then there's chocolate milk, and that's not right. And I can prove to myself it's a spoon, because I pull the spoon out, and I toss it away, and I put my glass of milk in the refrigerator overnight, and I come back the next day, and look, it's white milk again. And I sip it, and it's not quite as good as it was, but it's more like the pure white milk, because all the chocolate has settled out. And I can find ways to prove to myself, in quotes, prove, that it was the spoon that gave me that chocolate milk that I don't like.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is the chocolate was in there before the spoon came along. And the spoon had nothing to do with getting the chocolate in there. And the chocolate is my responsibility if it's my glass of milk. And
right.
So... All Mira Rubin is doing is pointing out to you that you got a bunch of gunk at the bottom of your glass. And if you don't see her for a while and you hang around people that you like, and you can pretend that there's no gunky black stuff at the bottom of your glass, but that doesn't mean the glass doesn't have gunky black stuff in it.
Point well taken. That's true.
So anyway, thank you so much for piping up here near the end of the show, and it's great to hear from you as always, but we've reached the end of our hour, so I will thank you again and mute your microphone and remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Excellent example of the chocolate in the glass. I love it.
You've probably forgotten that from the teacher training.
I have,
you were there when
until
that,
you started
when
telling
that came
it.
Out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Well, have a lovely
Thanks.
Show. Blessings.
All right. Bye. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, December the 8th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and I will invite you once again to go to our website, whyagain.org. Click on the Start Here button, and or just, you know, search around. There's a search bar on there. If there's something you can't find, type it in into the search bar, and it'll bring up all the links where it's mentioned. And if there's still something you can't find, drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And let me know what you're looking for, and I'll make sure that you have a link directly to it, or maybe even put it in a more prominent place where it's more easily found. Also, the iPhone is not, the app has not been updated yet, but the Google Play Store, the app is updated on the Android. So go out and experience the new app and see what all's going on there. That is Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And it'll pop up with a glowing heart, and then when you click on it and download it, you'll see mine and Michael's picture. And so you'll know you have the right app. I think it's the only forgiveness app that's out there. And it is free, totally. So, and it is private. So give some of those tools an opportunity to work in your life, and you'll see a change. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here once again to be part of this conversation. We've been working the last couple of days on the Beatitudes, and it turned out that Mark wasn't available today. And since we started with him, I thought I'd just put that on hold. We're going to get back together tomorrow on that topic. And we missed the reading from the book for a few days, so we'll start there. Unless, Jeannie, you've got somebody with a hand up in the phone queue or something happening in the chat room.
Nope, it is all quiet, so go for it.
Okay, cool. So we're on chapter 23 in the book. It's called The Aramaic Solution. If you're following along with us, we're at the bottom of page 156. And we're talking to Richard at this point about speech. And, you know, I had told him some things about himself, which he had not mentioned. You know, specifically, I brought forward an idea that I thought might apply to his childhood. And he's like, well, wait, I didn't tell you anything about my childhood. It's like, well, if we know how to listen, we're always talking about our lives and what's happened there. You know, it's kind of like if I look at the building materials for a building that's going to go up, I can tell a lot about the building. Not everything. Gee, I don't know what the paint surface is going to look like, but I can tell if it's a steel building or if it's a wooden building, if they're going to use, you know, bars on the window for security. I can tell a lot about the building by the materials being used. And words are kind of like building materials. You can tell a whole lot about what someone's been building their lives out of by the words that they use. So speech is a major, major key. And people don't use words that aren't obviously in their vocabulary, and they don't have things in their vocabulary they haven't experienced. So if you listen closely, sometimes people say, well, Michael, how did you know that? Just like Richard has in the book here. How did you know that about me? I just listened to your words. That's all, if we listen carefully. And so our invitation here is, if there are things that you've hidden from yourself in your life, just listen to your words. It will give you a great deal of information. And for anyone who has the eyes to see and the ears to hear, people say a whole lot about themselves that they don't have a clue they're saying by the way they structure, by the way they build the structures that they inhabit verbally. And so Richard was a little shocked that I could tell him something about his childhood. In fact, he said, and so I'm going to just cover the last paragraph that we talked about. Again, we're on 156. So I explained to him that he didn't. He had just said to me, well, I didn't tell you about my childhood, but his dash story did. Almost everyone experiences their own internal reality in place of what is happening in the world. This means there is a pattern or a theme for every reality flowing from brain cells. The words coming from a mind reflect the general patterns contained in the mind of the speaker. Words of delight and inspiration reflect a way of life that's designed as life is designed to be. Angry words reflect an angry history, and sad words a sad past. And fearful or fearsome words tell a story of a mind brought up in a world that is perceived to be an unsafe world. And when we realize that and start to look into the underlying dynamics, and in essence, that's what forgiveness does. Forgiveness empowers us to literally step into our own unconscious dynamics and bring correction to those things that are not in harmony with the truth of who we are. And that would mean words based in hostility or fear. And when you apply forgiveness in a place in your life where hostile or fearful words are being used, and a lot of times when you first start pointing out to people, boy, they become so upset. They think they've been successfully hiding from the world all along. And the truth is, nothing, and in fact, go back to the ancient scriptures where they said, nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. One of the first ways that our history is made known is by the words that we use and the way we structure the constructs of our mind. And so I'm working to get Richard to start to recognize that and to take responsibility for his words. So the key thought in the book here is your words show you what mind energy you're using to construct your realities moment to moment. So remembering that perception is a construct of the mind and exists nowhere except in the mind that has constructed it. You know, I use the example all the time of six people were at an accident. You listen in the courtroom and you wonder if any two of them were at the same accident. How could their words have been so different? How could their descriptions, they were all at the same thing? No, they weren't. Yes, externally, the same actuality happened. But what was triggered in each mind, the words, the concepts, the structures triggered in each mind as a result of that accident are unique and individual to each person. So once you recognize that, then you realize that a construct is reflected in the words used to produce it. And the words used to produce that construct give us a great deal of information about our history. So listening to people speak about any reality in their mind gives you a great deal of information about what has happened in their past. Reflected on the idea that the perceptual output of a mind tells you more about the content of that mind than about the object perceived. The output of a mind is always based on content that's in that mind and may or may not actually reflect the external world, the world of actuality. So just to be clear on our definition of words here. So we're defining reality, and you know, everybody's got one. If 7.5 billion people on the planet observe an actuality, there are going to be 7.5 billion realities. Each mind is going to construct its own perception of that event. Once you realize that, then the way we interpret the way our mind constructs events tells us a whole lot about our own history. And if we've been hiding some of our own history from ourselves, then deconstructing our constructs and looking back at the words and the structures that are built by them can give us a great deal of insight into our history and into what needs to be healed. We reviewed the actualities from that day in the restaurant and the realities Richard's mind led him. We distinguished between the two. He had experienced the actuality of a waitress picking up a cup of coffee. His mind fed him the reality from his past that something was being taken away. If you remember, you know, he's sitting in a restaurant, drinking a cup of coffee, and the waitress comes over and picks it up. His mind constructs the reality of something being taken away from him. What do we know from the fact that his mind structured that, that he's had things taken away from him in the past? That's how his mind perceives the situation. It's because that's what he has brain cells for. Now, the truth, if you remember, of the situation, when we covered that part of the book, is that he had on clean shirt and tie. The waitress noticed that some coffee had spilled in his the plate, the saucer for his cup. And she was getting it away from him so he didn't drip on himself. She's getting ready to give him a fresh cup of coffee. But he perceived something being taken. So his mind fed him a reality from the past that something was being taken away. We discussed the fact that his someone taking something from me reality surfaced because it was in him to be triggered, not because the waitress took his coffee. His thought that people take things from him was a filter through which he viewed life. And this was his opportunity to use true forgiveness to change that reality in his life. It's an interesting video that I happened across yesterday. And it was a gentleman named Michael Robinson from the University of Hartford, who's an historian. And he had, and this is something we'll probably use forevermore, you'll hear this often, but he created a thing he calls the Mr. Magoo hypothesis. Now, if you remember, Mr. Magoo, I don't think those cartoons are around anymore, but Mr. Magoo was a cartoon character, an older gentleman who, in the cartoon, who was myopic. He couldn't see. He couldn't see an inch in front of his face. So he wanders through life in the cartoon thinking he's in one place, when he's in a totally different circumstance and situation, and he bumbles his way through interpreting the situation, that the actuality that he's in, through the filter of the realities he expects. And so it makes for some hilarious cartoons. It's after listening to him, this historian, describe that, I went back and YouTubed. You know, went on YouTube and searched for a couple of Mr. Magoo cartoons. And I, you know, saw that when I was a kid, but I never realized what it really meant. It was just kind of a goofy thing. But when you look at it, it's really very profound. This cartoonist, and I'd say many a true word spoken in jest, this cartoonist produces this character who walks through his life with no clue where he actually is, because his visual receptors, his perception is shut down, and he thinks he's somewhere. He has a particular goal in mind, and he interprets the actuality that he's walking through as though it is the reality that he thinks he's in. And, you know, it's really worth going back and just watching a couple of those cartoons and realizing that that's what that cartoon was really about. You know, I probably haven't seen one of those cartoons in, I don't even know, 50 years. So I don't recall how I saw them 50 years ago, but I do remember watching those cartoons and how goofy it was. I don't know. I don't believe I had any insight into, oh, he thinks he's living in one reality when he's in another, and the experiences that happened to him. But most people are just like Richard in this situation, wherever there's hostility or fear, what your mind will do is it will structure your reality according to that hostility and fear-based perceptual construct rather than an accurate construct that's true about the actuality of the moment. And it makes us just about as silly as Mr. Magoo. If you remember, you know, Richard's sitting in this restaurant, he picks up his coffee, or he's going to pick it up, and the waitress comes over and kind of hurriedly takes it away. His reality is being taken away, and he goes into a kind of a little rage at her. And she's like, look, Mac, all I'm doing is trying to save you from getting your white shirt covered in coffee. There's coffee here. I'm getting you a fresh cup. Most people live like Mr. Magoo, and they'll keep insisting beyond any reasonable doubt that their perceptual construct of moment, which is a total reflection of something that maybe happened a decade or two or 10 decades ago, they'll insist that the construct of their mind is accurate about you, when the truth is the construct, where there's hostility or fear, is only accurate about them. Again, the idea that it surfaces because it's in us. He thought that people take things from him, or pardon me, his thought that people take things from him was a filter through which he viewed life. This was his opportunity to use true forgiveness to change that reality in his mind. He was dismayed and excited all in one breath. I didn't know my words made me that transparent. And I'm getting a sense of how you figured me out. How did you know I used to ignore my sister and fight a lot, he asked. Well, recall, you said when you attacked a waitress without her having a chance to explain, you would likely attack that quickly, only if you'd built a reality that says something like, attack first, don't listen. If you listen, you will lose. To common realities in families where parents play favorites. Whew, that's painfully close to my relationship with my sister, he said. Why don't you tell me all about me, he asked. Well, you'll notice, Richard, that I'm checking out what I'm hearing from you. That's an important step in this process. When I hear your words, I can only hear them for what they trigger in me. My meaning for your words might be totally off base. The key is what your words trigger in you, not what they mean to me. I always work to keep my insights and feedback in the form of questions so I stay on track. I'm here to support you looking into your issues, not mine. And it's really sad that a lot of therapists are therapying themselves. They're therapying their own reality structures through their client. They're not therapying their client at all. So, Richard, I'm not here to, you know, he wants me to tell him about his whole life. It's like, Richard, I'm not here to tell you anything. Words are a topic we could spend hours on. In fact, in our Laws of Living intensive, we do. A good practice is to observe the words you speak. If you see yourself using words that are not in support of what you truly want to create in your life, use the tools to change your reality structure and your speech. Key thought? What do you believe about yourself to create what's happening in your life? Not sure? Listen to your words for clues. And so Richard asked me the question, do you have any thoughts about a topic for your worksheet? Or pardon me, I'm asking Richard that question. Is there anything in particular that you want to work on? So that closes out and completes the Aramaic Solution, chapter 158. And you'll notice we outlined a couple of tools there. And one, of course, looking at your words and then looking into the forgiveness process. And remembering that forgiveness is a tool with which you collapse perceptual constructs in the mind based in hostility or fear. You get to access and process through the underlying original events where the hostility or fear was generated. You get to dissolve, to weaken, to remove literally the energy fields from brain cells that hold unresolved pain. And as you do that, you get back to the truth of who you are. And the whole object of this work, you know, is to live somewhere else other than the Magoo hypothesis. To really, truly live in the present moment, experiencing actuality for what it is, rather than working through perceptual constructs from the past and pretending that the perceptual constructs of your mind have anything to do with or are in any way, shape, or form accurate about the present. Because most of them simply are not. They're simply false. So, Miss Jeannie, that finishes chapter 23, and I was going to go into 24, but I thought I'd just check with you first and see if we've got anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening with the chat room. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead with a little more work from chapter 24. We're down to less than a month now to finish this last chapter on forgiveness.
There's no hands up, and it's all quiet. Go for it.
Cool. Well, then we're going to move to chapter 24, which is the bottom of page 159. And why is this happening to me again? And by the way, we can't sell you a copy of the book because they're out of print. However, if you would like to access the book, there are a couple different ways to do it. You can go to Amazon or eBay. Way back 25 years ago when we printed this, there were several tens of thousands of copies that went out all over the globe. And so there are enough of them around yet that eBay has lots of them on sale used, as does Amazon. So you can always pick the book up on either of those sites if you want to order a copy. And you know, sometimes there's a little less, a couple of bucks. Brings up embarrassment for me when I think about my book selling for $2 or $3. But hey, you know, that's my issue. In any event, the other thing you can do is you can go to our website. There's actually two other ways to access the book. You can go to our website and you can download the book free. It is the current printed version in any one of several different languages, Farsi, English, German, Russian, Spanish. The book is in Swedish, but we don't have a copy of that one. That's the only version we don't have on our website. And I've been pursuing the publisher of that we had an agreement with, that if they stopped printing the book, that the copyright would revert to us. But the publisher's disappeared now. So, but anyway, I think we've still got a couple of copies of the book in Swedish. And so you can download the book free. Or if you want an updated version, we've only printed the original version. We've done, I don't know, three or four printings of the original version. And there is a new version that is in the CD form that you can stream from our website, or you can buy the CD package if you want, that also has an MP3 on it, so you can play it on your radio or your phone or what have you. And so if you look in the catalog, you'll see Why Is This Happening to Me Again, book on CD or streamed book. And that is a new version. It's updated from the original printed version that we've been working with for this past year. So if you want to access the book, there are the different ways to do it. Of course, the download from our website is free, whyagain.org, Amazon, eBay, 2, 3, 4, 7. We've actually seen a couple times people have had it listed on eBay for, you know, $6,000 or $7,000. It's like, boy, I should reprint this book. But anyway, so there are ways to get a hold of it and read along with us, or you'll find that sitting and reading the book in one sitting. I've had several people who've like, Michael, I've read that book 15 times now, and I'm finally starting to understand it. And I know that personally, with the fact that, you know, I wrote it and I rewrote it, the version that you can get the audio CD on, that probably goes back now 20 years or so. That CD was done before we met, wasn't it, Jeannie? Do you remember? Was that something that Graham and I worked on after it was before we met? Yeah, so it's 20 years ago anyway. Thank you for being in my world for so long, dear heart. Take a moment to just breathe into and appreciate you. In any event, you can ask us in any one of several ways. And actually, I just had I'm communicating with a book study club in England. Has a couple thousand people that do different book studies, and they're looking at taking the book up as a study too. In any event, let's look at Work It Out with Your Best Friend, Chapter 24. So the bottom, or on page 159, I asked Richard, do you have an idea of what you'd like to do the worksheet on? He says, where do I start? Well, the best place to start is to be clear on what you're doing and why you're doing it. The people who really use these worksheets tell me that they become the best friend they ever had. Note, the emphasis is on using the tool. What the process does is give you an opportunity to confront directly the parts of your mind and life that don't work for you, the parts with which you might sabotage yourself. And I feel a little resistance to that thought, Michael. No, you're not alone. Nobody wants to feel their pain until they understand. Understand what? Richard says. Pain takes a toll even when it is not consciously felt. How so? Recall our discussion about pain. Pain is the reflection of a stored destructive energy. When people deny and restrict access to pain, the only thing they've accomplished is keeping out of direct sight. Keeping their pain out of direct sight. Hidden or anesthetized pain is not removed from experience through denial or drugs. It is felt as the aches and pains of aging, what people call aging. The twinge of emotional upset that floats in and out of our experience, the irrational outbreaks that destroy relationships, the quote-unquote accidents that occur, headaches, body aches, degenerative diseases, and the thousand irritations that subtract from the possible quality of life. So you can pretend that there's no pain to resolve, but if you're experiencing these things I just described, guess what? You're playing in the realm of dissociated pain. You've hidden something, but the degenerative effects go on. When you access whatever that energy is, when you pull it out of tissue and you transmute it through the presence of love using the forgiveness tool, then the tissue structure is relieved of that burden, and those symptoms that we just spoke about tend to disappear. There's an old saying that the brave die once, the coward a thousand times. When you're fortified with actual tools to face and heal whatever is hidden, trauma and pain are dismantled and removed from life. As you do this work, you will find your enjoyment of life, your sense of well-being, and your aliveness will increase in proportion to the amount of forgiveness that you do. In the past, if life was lived without tools, most found that facing an old trauma meant reinforcing it and being powerless to change. The true forgiveness process changes all of that. Shift happens. The issues in life can be faced and healed. Okay, Michael, I see the why of doing the reality management process, but I'm not sure I understand the what. The what is very simple. If someone triggers anger, fear, rage, hate, vengeance, gossip, or any other disintegrative reality in you, it is your opportunity to heal yourself, not by letting them off the hook. It's So when we're talking about forgiveness, never forgive anybody for anything. Never attempt to forgive yourself for anything. Apply forgiveness to the pained realities in your mind, in your physiology, and remove them. Then you'll be doing actual forgiveness work. So it's not about letting them off the hook, but by changing the pain-producing reality in your mind. Whatever your experience of life is, every reality in your mind is changeable. You cannot directly change what happens in the outer world. People become frustrated and uptight when they continuously try to control life. The way to change the outer world is through indirect influence. By changing the realities in your mind, you shift your whole energy field. When you do, the whole pattern of your life shifts. And the ripple effect changes everything you attract. If abundance is your issue, pennies turn into dollars. The traditional translations of the scriptures speak of the fall of man. In the Aramaic, that text refers not to a fall, but instead says man forgot how to live in abundance. Heal the poverty realities in your mind. Whatever the form of poverty, whether it's relationship, money, work, joy, health, or abundance, and a change in outer circumstances is pulled in automatically through the law of resonance. Okay, I understand what we're about to do. Now I pick a topic. What kind of topics are fair game for a worksheet? Richard, you can do a worksheet on any person, place, thing, or event that resonates a painful reality in you. It can be a present moment event or something from your past, or even your future anticipated events. You can also use your own emotions or yourself as the subject of a worksheet. Oh, I could do a worksheet on conflict with women. I've had a conflict with my mom, my sister, and almost every woman with whom I've ever had a relationship, including waitresses. Well, that covers a lot of territory, Richard. I would suggest you be very specific and choose a mildly disturbing topic for your early worksheets. A narrowly defined subject will produce the best results, I recommend. Also, forgiveness, like any other skill, is developed through practice. The first time you use this tool, it's best to start with something a little easier than your biggest issue in life. Your lifelong issues tend to have a lot of unconsciousness attached to them, and it is best if you can start with something small enough that you can stay relatively conscious. As you build your strength through doing the reality management sheets, you can move to the bigger issues or situations in your life. So, you know, it's like the forgiveness muscle is something that most people have never used. They've been taught the lie that forgiveness is about you. You did something terrible that caused all of this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll let you off the hook because you made this pain inside of me happen. That's the traditional story that the world lives in. Actual forgiveness has nothing to do with that story. It's a very destructive story. And to think you could possibly forgive anyone is a grave error. And when I say it's a grave error, what I mean is because you've projected the root or the cause of your pain onto your brain's image of someone else, you're always externalizing the cause. And by externalizing the cause, it's kind of like the Mr. Magoo hypothesis. By externalizing the cause, you live in a world. The actuality is, this is inside of you, it's yours, you're doing it to yourself, but you walk through the world like Mr. Magoo, and you think they did it to you, and the projections are just ludicrous. So when we wake up and understand what's really going on, that's where a change happens. And so we're looking to create support for an understanding that that kind of change is a natural thing to have happen if you've got the tools with which to bring it about. And our whole purpose, our whole, you know, the reason we've been carrying on this conversation for 10 years on this radio show, 5 days a week, an hour a day, all the archives are there if you want to go listen. The reason we're doing it is to assist people to get out of the Mr. Magoo syndrome, to stop clutching through the world like somebody else is the problem and recognize the truth. Understanding where you truly are, you can change what's going on. But if you don't understand what's really going on, where you truly are, then it's the impossible dream to bring correction. So forgiveness is the key tool for correction. And we're here to support on as deep a level as we possibly can the understanding that forgiveness is this inside job and that you can move through literally every painful reality that your generational patterns have learned to produce. And oftentimes the things that people will end up working on, they'll realize, or sometimes they won't even realize it, that there are issues that have been going on in the family bloodline maybe for centuries, passed on, environmentally projected and re-experienced over and over and over again. So throughout the rest of this month, we'll go through this full chapter on how the worksheet process operates. If you would like to print the worksheet off so that you can follow along with us, go to the website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, or actually every page in the site, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that link. Scroll down, and you will see a list of reality management worksheets. There are several different versions. It's something that developed over a period of about 40 years. We've been relatively constant now for about the last 4 or 5 years. There have been only a couple of significant changes in the last 4 or 5 years. But prior to that, I mean, literally, if you look at today's worksheet, you're looking at, I don't even know, I haven't even tried to keep track, but there were oftentimes major revisions 3 times in a day. So you're looking at least version, I don't know, 3,277, whatever. And along the way, some of the worksheets that we got feedback from people were particularly significant. We've kept those worksheets. It's been a matter of testing different ideas. What will people use? What can people accept? What can people hear? And so, you know, each worksheet has a slight variation on the theme, and you can pick them up at whyagain.org. And there are actually at least, I think, 20 different radio shows where we've spent either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself has walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process. So there's plenty of instructions on how to use the sheet. It's interesting, I'll oftentimes hear from people who've been around this work for some time period, and they'll say, oh, I got this going on in my life, Michael, and I need some help. It's like, well, how many worksheets have you done that? Well, I hadn't actually thought of doing any. Oh, well, then go do some worksheets. You know, I mean, there's a reason you're in that muddle, and it's because it's your opportunity to learn. And if you resist that learning, then you're trapped in the resistor. And it's interesting that in the ancient Aramaic language, the word Satan means the resistor, one who misleads. And when people have things going on in their own physiology and their own emotional structures, but have got somebody else to blame, just listen to the language of blame. You made me mad. You made me afraid. You hurt me. You made me sad. That's Mr. Magoo. Oh, I think I'm in, somebody else did this to me, so I react to things as though somebody else is doing it to me. In the meantime, I'm walking through a world where I'm doing it to myself. And, you know, the two realities are so dramatically opposed to each other that they are, it's not an easy transition to move into really truly being in full responsibility. So I invite you to take up the worksheet. And over the next few days, we'll be stepping into the steps of it and moving through it. You can, as I say, you can listen to the radio shows if you hit the Start Here button in the upper left-hand corner of whyagain.org. And scroll down, you'll see special radio shows. And that's where some of our, what we consider to be our more powerful radio shows and the specific shows where we did a whole worksheet with someone. So those instructions are there so that you've got a guide to how to make use of this process. And of course, if you have a question, the reason for this show is to be here for support. So if you have a question about how the worksheet operates, now's the time to push one. That'll raise your hand. And if you push one, Jeannie will see your hand go up in the phone queue. You will rise to the top of the queue, and she'll invite you to participate in the conversation. The other thing you can do to access the worksheet process is you can go to your app store on your phone, whatever version of phone you have, whether it's an Android or an iPhone. If you type in the words Heartland, you go to the App Store on either device and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. If you type that into your phone, you will find the world's only forgiveness app created by Miss Jeannie. And she's still working on, you know, what have you been going on, about 3 weeks here now into this next update. The, as she said earlier in the show, the Android is updated now, and she's working with the technicians in India to develop the iPhone version. So now you've got four different segments. You've got a kids segment with the Dragon Klingon game. You've got two different worksheets to work with. You've got the commitment to work with. And then there's a floating button on each page that if you're in the middle of doing a piece of forgiveness work and a question comes up, you click that, ping, send us an email. We will take your question, introduce it on the radio show, talk about it, and we'll send you back an email telling you of just exactly where we address your question if you don't happen to be on the radio show. So we're here to support you every which way but loose. If you ask your question, we'll answer it and let you know when. So there's that in the new feature in the app. And then there's also a feature where you've got links that can take you to what events are happening, what the calendar looks like, to our catalog, to the worksheets. You know, there are links to, and it gives you very broad access to things on our 20,000 or so page website. So it's an awesome new piece of work. Thank you, Nini, for doing that. Nini, by the way, is Jeannie's name from Aria. She calls her Nini. And so we're here to support you. And if you're in the phone queue, it'd be a great time to push one and let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Miss Jeannie, we've got about 16 or 17 minutes left, so I thought I'd complete the monologue and leave some room for dialogue if there's anybody out there with a thought or a question.
No, we've got 15 minutes. Nobody has a hand up, so come on, someone press one. Okay, a hand just went up. It's Dusty, area code 904. You're on the air.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hope to be hey there, young man. Welcome.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you, Jeannie, for sending me the Beatitudes link. I have a flip phone, and I've got about a postage stamp size a little window, and I got up my magnifying glass and at least copied it over to my computer, and I loved it. I loved how it was written. I loved everything about it, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to, I think Michael has my email, and if not, anyways, I can send you a text with my email in case you send me something else. If you could send it there, then I will actually be able to read it. But it was appreciated what you sent. Thank you.
I didn't quite understand, Dusky, your voice is a little bit fuzzy. I didn't quite understand what it was you were asking to have sent. Are you there, Dusty?
I didn't catch it either. Dusty, are you still with us? It still shows he's on the switchboard.
If you can hear us, Dusty, we can't hear you. And your voice is a little bit...
You.
Oh, there you are. No, I got you.
Right back.
I can hear you now. So I didn't quite understand. Your voice was a little fuzzy. Exactly what you were asking us to send you? Sounds like there's a loose connection in your phone. You're kind of cutting in and out. We've lost you, Dusty.
He's dropped off the switchboard, so maybe he's calling back in.
Well, dial back in again. Cool. Yeah, I couldn't understand exactly what he was saying. His voice was kind of fuzzy. Going to get that man new phone.
Yeah, I didn't understand him either.
In the meantime, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
It's quiet. Let's see. I think this might be. Dusty, let's try again.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My phone is
much clearer now.
I've got a dumb phone, and it's getting dumber by the day. So that's,
so your request was to have something sent to you.
It is. But it seems like the phone. But can you hear me okay now?
You are now loud and clear. What was it you were asking to have sent you? I couldn't understand that when you said it.
Well, yes, I'm going to repeat what I mumbled or said before. Jeannie, thank you for sending me the link to the Beatitudes, and I really appreciate it. I love the way that it was worded and all that. It was, rather succinctly put in and easy to digest. I would request
that poster took me about 2 years.
What?
That poster took me about 2 years to do the translation and put together.
Oh, okay.
I literally sat with the translation and the dictionary and wrote that out until it came together. And my partner at that time had worked with the Aramaic for far longer than I had. And I'd submit it back to him and we'd refine and, refine literally every dot, every I, every T to make sure we were as accurate as possible. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains why it was so beautifully done. Thank you for that.
My partner was a genius.
Ah, well, that helped.
That helped a lot. He was an attorney, and actually he'd been in the Navy. His name was Dan McDougald. He'd been in the Navy, and in World War II, they did IQ tests on everybody in the Navy. He was number three.
Uh-huh. What? You mean
that's the kind
of
mind he had. He was number three in the U.S. Navy in World War II in their IQ test.
Oh my God!
So it was an awesome. I mean, we would literally, Dan and I would spend. I was in Missouri at Heartland, and he was in Albany, Georgia, before he passed. And I would spend an average of, he did this work. He worked in the prison system. He quit his law practice and wanted to really benefit humanity. So, he pretty much was starving. So I would spend between $1,000, back then when, you know, we didn't have cell phones where we could do what we do now, I would spend between $1,000 and $1,500 a month on phone calls. And we'd sit on the phone and we'd go back and forth and chew on each idea. I mean, we literally chewed each idea and back and forth till we refined every thought and got it into a form that made it teachable. So that was a blessed time in my life.
And I appreciate that dedication because that piece reflects that kind of refinement. And I'll bet this guy made you smarter in several ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, eternally grateful to Dan McDougall. If you're listening, Dan, thank you.
God bless you, bro.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And
he's a giant.
Wow. That's amazing. Anyways, I had a thought about that, but I wanted to tell Jeannie, if you would please, if you send me something else, if you could send it to my email, because of my this phone only has a postage stamp. Blah 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 blah. Anyways, my email.
Right.
Michael has it, but I can text it to Michael's number again if you need.
Okay.
I've got it here. I'll pass it on to Jeannie.
Okay, great.
I've got
yes,
it.
Yes, well, that on the Beatitudes, it makes sense now when you say how you wrote it, because it was so refined. I was going, wow, it's shiny, it's so refined. And it reminds me of when I saw Leo Kottke, if anybody remembers him from years ago, in his 12-string guitar. I was about 20 feet away from him in almost a private performance in Atlanta. And he said what I do with songs, and you two certainly did with this Beatitudes. He said, well, what I do is take a perfectly good song and beat it to death, is how he put it. And
I understand it.
Also, I have to tell you that I love your Mr. Magoo metaphor. I remember.
Well, I wish that were mine, but
yeah. Well, it's worthy, and I certainly see in this little tourist town more of that going on than even just a few years ago, I guess I can understand, but it's a great metaphor. I wish they'd bring it back up to date modality. That would be great. I guess I know we're running close to out of time, but in the Beatitudes, and I don't know if this is a question or a statement, or I'm hoping that you might have something more on it, but maybe it's self-explanatory. At the very end, it talked about the source of creation, and it was Allah.
Yes.
Which is so close to Allah, you know. And I wonder if that was was that something Dan came up with, or how did that work?
That's when the original work, this goes back into the 70s, was done on the Kaboris manuscript, and it's called the Kaboris because it was found on a river in Turkey called the Kaibor River.
Okay.
And that was back in the 70s. There was a group of 25 of the world's top Aramaists who worked on the translation work. And so that's where the original translation work was done. And Dan directed that as an attorney, and he used the rules of evidence from his legal practice, his legal training, to determine the veracity of what got into the translation. And then, and even when all 25 translators agreed on the meaning of a word or a concept, that wasn't considered a final or accurate translation. And the part that I played in it was, once that was done, then I would take it into the laboratory of the classroom and see if it worked, if it produced the results it purported to produce. Once it produced those results, then we consider the translation verified. And so that's the process that was done to get it to this point.
Well, that's a pretty amazing journey, and I can tell you that all those translations, everything I've heard that were that you've used in translation from the Aramaic strike a chord with me, and I love it. I love hearing what they really meant, or close to it at least.
I hear you. By the way, I want to make sure we accurately acknowledge where this Mr. Magoo came from, and it was actually UPA Animation Studio. It was a studio production. There's, as far as I know, there's no individual's name behind it, and the voice was a man named Jim Backus that that did that cartoon, and the fellow who came up with this idea of the Magoo hypothesis was an historian named Michael Robinson from the University of Hartford. And that's where I heard it. You know, in his explanations, he's talking about some historical things. He says, you know, a lot of us are like Mr. Magoo. And by the way, here's the Mr. Magoo hypothesis. And he explains, and, you know, I can remember that cartoon, but I never remember what was really going on. But as he explained it, and then I went back and watched a couple of cartoons, it's like, oh, man, this guy doesn't have a clue where he is. And he interprets everything through this filter. And that's how most people live their lives. And it's kind of like, you know, we talked about Rachma from the Kabbalists and from the Aramaic, and it's like it's Rachma that brings us into the actuality of the moment when we do that. Otherwise, we're just walking through the world as blind as Mr. Magoo.
Right. And you know, partly other than that look of him trying to stare at things, it's his voice that I remember, that rough thing that he did.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
As a kid, I remember from the crib, listening to the radio and thinking, "Oh man, I want to be a sound effects guy when I grow up on radio."
Was that what inspired you into that field? That's awesome.
It must have been. A sound has always been just. I mean, most people are really, really, really visual, and I have a sound thing going as well. Almost equal. Yes, I think it did. And there was a couple other things that prompted that, too. But
that's pretty cool.
Yes, that was it. And if you ever decide you want to redo that, I'd be glad to try out for the voice.
Uh-huh.
But cool. UPA, yeah, I remember that now. And I don't know what else they did, but I'm still looking for Roadrunner cartoons myself, but can't find them.
The important stuff in life.
The important stuff in life. Well, you know, there was humor, and it was Billy Bob Thornton I saw on this program that was talking about the National Lampoon, and he said it was the Lampoon that taught him that humor – more often convey the truth than any other form, because people will listen. It's funny, you know. And,
right.
But he was, you know, he was very intense about the fact that that's where he was coming from. And anyways, that aha! Thank you for that explanation. I'm carrying that inside me now as part of my stuff.
Awesome. We're down to the last minute.
I will be
so.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a call a little later. But anyways, thank you very much, both of you, for all this. And,
okay, one more little piece of information.
I wish everybody well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I was doing some looking up of the whole Mr. Magoo thing, and Jim Backus was the voice of Mr. Magoo from 1949 to 1989 for 40 years. It's pretty cool. So everyone, thank you for joining us. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah, 1949 to 1989.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. All right, blessings. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.